Hi, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Defending the Natty podcast. I hope you guys have had a wonderful time this past month. Hope you guys are getting ready for the holiday season. It's got some fun plans with your friends and family. You are listening to the preeminent and only college fantasy football dynasty podcast. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds once a month on roughly the 15th of each month. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusdecanton.com, subscribe there with one of our tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devy, C2C, betting needs. All of that is there. As I'm sure most of you all know, I can be found on Twitter. I am at CFF_Jared there. And with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Mr. Nate Marquise, who can be found at CFF Nate. Nate, how you doing, man? Season's over. How'd your leagues go? I know you kicked butt in the Dynasty League. Obviously, we both are in, but how'd the rest of your leagues go?
Dude, it's great, man. I'm happy to be back on the mic with you. It's been a little over a month now since we had Volume Picks on, which was really fun last time. So yeah, season's over. We're full swing in portal season now, which is I'm sure going to consume a lot of what we're going to discuss tonight. So season was good. I was fortunate enough to win my fantasy league for second time in 2 years, so that was nice with the dynasty 24 team dynasty there. And it was a pretty fruitful CFF year altogether, so it's been good, man. It's been really good.
I am glad.
Excited for the holidays.
Oh, absolutely. Again, I had, I think week 13 might have been one of the worst weeks I've ever had in fantasy. I went in with five playoff teams competing, including three first place teams, and I came out with one team making it to the championship. It was absolutely gut-wrenching that week, but I'm glad things went well for you and it was fruitful for you. I did end up winning that one league though that made it through,
so nice.
That one little good thing there at the end, and it was a pretty pretty solid league there, so definitely happy about that. And like awesome. You said, it's a lot even changed since the end of that. You were talking about our show with Volume Pigs a month ago, and I, as you were saying that, I was literally just thinking to myself, I'm like, dang, if I went back and listened to that show now, just like how much has changed even from then, right? Like, shoot, you were talking, I remember, Nate, you were talking about having Ahmad Hardy and Fluff Bothwell in your top five dynasty running backs, and that was originally going to be the topic of this show, right? Was that you and I were going to have some kind of early dynasty rankings and everything like that. And then day one of the portal hits, and both of us, I think, kind of realized very quickly that there's no point in making dynasty rankings right now, at least not until everything kind of levels out. We figure out where people are going and stuff like that. So I guess we'll just hop right into that, Nate. Again, it's portal season right now, and we could spend this whole show talking about, oh, where are guys going and stuff like that. But I think you and I both agree that, one, CTN, we'll cover that in January. We'll have full recaps of all that kind of stuff, of how it's going to affect this upcoming season and stuff like that. But I think this is a good opportunity for us to kind of sit back and talk about how does this affect just dynasty going forward in general, right? Like, I've had multiple reactions from different people, both who play CFF Dynasty, but also Campus Decanton Leagues as well. And the portal has just gotten very frustrating, especially with G5 players, right? So I guess, Nate, I'll just kind of leave it open-ended to you. Like, what are your kind of general thoughts here going forward with the portal season and CFF Dynasty?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough to wrap your head around. I mean, it's something that we just anticipate all season long, things going a certain way. And then portal season happens and things go in a way different, you know, the opposite direction or totally different than what you could have ever imagined for certain players. And I mean, some players will stick around, but I think specifically as it pertains to G5 players, every year it seems like we're seeing more and more of those guys that are able to, you know, put up a really nice production at that level, want to level up. And I don't blame them. I mean, that's where, you know, that's where the money is. So when NIL changed, when the portal windows happened, and basically it became a situation where you could transfer without penalty as many times as you wanted. I mean, it was pretty easy to see that this day was coming. So, and it's probably only going to be the same, if not even happening to an even greater degree each year that this is in effect. There's only so many G5 programs like, you know, Memphis that have a ton of money, and maybe even Tulane to a certain degree. But I mean, we've even seen Darren Mensah leave Tulane. So it's just, you know, there's just not a lot of G5 programs that can hang with all of the dollars that are put in from donors and TV revenue and stuff like that, that these Power Four programs and specifically, you know, Big Ten and SEC programs have.
Yeah, it really does just kind of boil down to the fact that these G5 players have zero, and I mean zero, incentive to stay at their respective schools unless they are truly just absolute diehards of that school. And let's be real, like, I'm not saying it can happen, but I think very few G5 players really go to G5 schools with the, you know, level of dedication, the level of commitment that even guys that go to, like, you know, an SEC program or a Big Ten program go. Because, like, unless you are a hyper-local sports fan, right, like, if you're in the state of Tennessee, more than likely your family grew up rooting for, you know, the Vols or Vanderbilt or something like that. You weren't really getting together at Thanksgiving and everybody's gathered around the TV to watch the Memphis game that weekend, right? So again, there's just a lot of things that really just kind of push against G5 teams and G5 players in general. And I think it really just boils down to, we have to adjust how we deal with these G5 players and teams moving forward. But I think that's all it really boils down to, is just an adjustment, right? There's like I said earlier, there's been a lot of reactions, especially this season, with just how many G5 players have entered the portal, that we've gotten to a point where I think people are kind of throwing their hands up a little bit. I mean, I'll throw this out here. Josh Chevy, a good friend of ours of the show, he's on our show several months ago, very smart guy, and he replied to one of my statements I made online on Twitter, where I said that we got to start treating G5 players as basically one-year rentals. And he replied saying, like, I really think the CFF Dynasty leagues that include G5 teams might be untenable in the next couple of years. I will push back against that a little bit, because I do think that the G5 is still an important part of CFF Dynasty, right? One, that's still where a ton of the points lie in college fantasy every single year, and I don't like the idea of, even if it's for 1 year, just cutting off that many points. Two, we got tons of guys, like, as much as we complain about guys going from G5 to P4, we got tons of guys going from P4 to G5 who find themselves new homes there. So,
I just watched Mario Anderson score a touchdown for Memphis just a minute ago. As we're recording this, you know, the happening live as we're recording it, and speak of the devil, Mario Anderson scores a touchdown on a shovel pass. So, yeah, I mean, those scenarios, you know, and then you even have the scenarios with what's his name at Corey Rucker at Arkansas State, right? Yep. the rare G5 P5 G5 guy that decides to go back and is just as successful, if not even more, than he was when he was originally at Arkansas State. So I can, you know, I get what Josh is saying here. You know, I do think that we have to change the way that we look at things, especially, you know, we learned a lot with running back, I think, this year. And there's just, programs cannot devote too much of their NIL funding to running backs. And when you have a G5 running back blow up, there's just no way that they're going to be able to pay them, especially when a P5 program could pay such a smaller allocation of their NIL funds and be able to pay them still way more than that G5 program could. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about a lot of these guys today, but I think I'm especially gun shy on some of these G5 running backs that blow up. But I mean, at the same time, it's like, what are you going to do? Not pick up Ahmad Hardy? Are you not going to pick up Fluff Bothwell? And somebody has, you know, a really strong second half of the season in your league because they were the ones to pick them up. I mean, we just got to kind of hope and pray that they land, you know, a decent Power Four spots. and can maybe still not be as productive as they were. But, you know, with guys like Qualy Conley this year and stuff like that, it's not unheard of for them to still be productive when they move up. You kind of want them to go with their follow the staff that they're currently with, and that doesn't always work out. But I don't know, are you so gun shy now that it would definitely prevent you from maybe spending as much of your free agent budget on a guy like that you think it would normally be, you know, like just a slam dunk, incredible dynasty asset, but knowing that they might or likely move up now that you're going to be more gun shy in that situation?
Again, I think you just have to be honest with yourself about what exactly it is you're grabbing, right? I think with, like you said, right, you're not going to see Ahmad Hardy or Fluff Bothwell blow up and then just not add them to your lineup. But it's the exact same thing as like if you saw a senior at a power four team blow up. Like you're going to add them to your roster. You just know you're probably not going to get them next year, right? You right. cannot look at young G5 guys and say, this is what I'm building my dynasty team around moving forward, right? It's basically, like I said in that tweet I sent a couple weeks ago, where it was like, they're one-year rentals. In my opinion, you almost got to treat them like a senior or one of these, you know, upperclassmen who is like, they may come back. Maybe they go to the NFL. Maybe they come back. Who knows? It's a roll of the dice. You know what you're getting for this 1 year, and then anything after that is bonus. Like you said, there's lots of ways even for G5 guys to still have value afterwards. I mean, shoot, look at some of the landing spots where some of the guys are going here, right? Like Devin Dampier going to Utah, following his coach there at offensive coordinator. Normally we don't love Utah's offensive system, but if they're truly making a change there, that could still be pretty valuable for us there in the Big 12. Ahmad Hardy could be the potential number one back at Ole Miss. Like or TJ Campbell could be great at Rutgers. Like there's still plenty of places for these guys to go. But again, it all feels like bonus. I think in dynasty, right? Like what if you are a team who is trying to rebuild and you're trying to target specifically young guys off the waiver wire saying like, all right, this is for the future. Don't go for the G5 guys anymore. You got to build your team around young power four guys, because there's a lot more paths to production for those guys, right? They stick with their teams and they do exactly what you hoped they do. Or they enter the transfer portal. They go to another power four program where they're likely to, you know, play. Or they, even better, they transfer down to the G5, right?
Yeah.
I think that's, if you're rebuilding a team, that's what you have to build your team around going forward. You cannot go G5, guys.
Is it crazy for me to think that I'm actually, like, the thing that bothers me more is not the fact that I invest in a G5 player that looks like he's going to be incredible for Dynasty, and then boom, after year one, he's moving up. That doesn't bother me as much because I know that's going to happen, or at least I need to assume that that's going to happen. The thing that I'm having the most difficult time adjusting to for CFF Dynasty is these situations where I'm pretty convinced I don't want this player because they're going to be buried and it's never going to be a strong asset. Let's take Aaron Nolan, for instance, or Walker White. Is it Walker White? What's his name at Auburn? Walker White. And even Luke Cromanhook, who's maybe even the best example of this because he's now for sure at Mississippi State at the time we're recording this. It's like, these are guys that I'm staying away from because I know that their coaches are either one going to portal over them, or two, you know, they're just going to be buried in the depth chart, and I'm not going to see, I'm not going to wait 2 years. Now it's like, holy crap, I don't know if this guy's going to, and then you get like, I stay away from them, and then they end up transferring, and maybe they end up at a great spot like Luke Cromanhook. But then you also, it's like, okay, well, what about Austin Novosad, who's just, I guess, going to sit there and rot away like Ty Thompson did for 3 years at Oregon. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't know, at least with the G5 studs, you know, hey, I'm getting them good for a year, and then we'll see what happens after year one. These other guys like Aaron Nolan and others that you and I have like said, hey, don't invest too much in a guy like this. It's going to be QB4 for Ohio State. And then it's like, okay, or they can transfer or they don't, like Austin Nova said, you know, it's crazy.
Well, I mean, again, it makes it interesting for, like, you know, for supplemental draft reasons and stuff like that, right? Like,
yeah,
it definitely kind of keeps those pools nice and filled and everything like that. But I also totally agree with you that it's just frustrating, like, thinking, like, for example, a lesser example, when AJ Swan transferred to LSU last year, I was like, okay, I can deal with him sitting behind Nussmeier for a year. Like, I like his talent. And I just assumed that, again, after Nuss left, Swan would probably be the guy. Now, not only is Nuss staying another year, but they wouldn't grab Michael Van Buren. And now I have no clue what the heck's going to happen in that LSU quarterback room over there. And so, like, that sucks for me holding on to him for a year there. I'm sure Jaden Rashada fans are livid with what's going on with Georgia, right? Like, Gunnar Stockton's probably going to start ahead of him. Stockton's got 2 years left there. Georgia's shopping around in the transfer portal a little bit right now. Like, God knows what's going to happen there. I know, dude, another thing I know you wanted to bring up here, but this other pattern of guys that are, like, young and promising transferring, and you're sitting there thinking, like, ah, yes, let's go. Let's go get you a starting role. And then they just go somewhere they know they're going to sit, right? Like, for this year, Michael Van Buren going to LSU. Ashton Daniels going to Auburn. Ashton Daniels could be incredible if he just would suck it up and go to a G5 school. Deshaun Purdy, the quarterback out of Charlotte, who's kind of a dual threat guy, he's, like, rumored to be going to Florida to hang out behind DJ Lagway for whatever reason. And then last year, like, Dante Moore, Chandler Rogers, Jaden Rashada, Jaden Maiava, AJ Swan, just talked about him. All those different guys. I feel like this is honestly more frustrating than anything else.
Yeah, those are hard to predict, man. I mean, you think you've got this incredible asset like Michael Van Buren, and you and I are both in the same boat. We want our return on investment early, right? We don't want to sit there and wait 2 years for a guy to become something. It's frustrating for me as somebody that drafted Dante Moore really high, obviously. And then, you know, you see him start, and it's mixed reviews, but at the same time, you see him secure a starting role. And then he goes and sits for a year. And so you just never know if they're ever going to get that job back. But, I mean, the nice thing is, and we don't want to be all doom and gloom, because some of this, you know, makes it – portal season's literally maybe my favorite time of year, because you're just sitting there waiting for the next alert on your phone to find out who's going into the portal and who's going where. But, I mean, not all of this is bad stuff, right? For every Jaden Rashada – you have a Sam Levitt who you like as a really good prospect coming out of high school, but you're like, gosh, I don't love this landing spot in Michigan State. And then he goes and lands with Kenny Dillingham, and you know, now the sky's the limit for the next couple of years. So, you know, or at least until he transfers somewhere. but it's just, you know, I mean, it's wild, and maybe it does create more of a redraft effect. Like, every year, even though we're playing CFF Dynasty, it has to be viewed to a certain degree in redraft. But I think at the end of the day, and we said this even before this season, at the end of the day, trust your evaluation, trust, you know, the people that you think do a good job with evaluations and you want their information, trust them. And hope the cream rises to the top. And even if a guy gets buried on the depth chart, you can think, okay, he might be somewhere else the next year. And it is a little bit of, you know, a luck of the draw into what hand you're going to get dealt in. Does he land at a really strong spot, or does he transfer to Iowa, or does he, you know, does he transfer to Virginia? Like, if you're Chandler Morris fans, you know, so you just don't know, but trust the evaluation process. And I think more often than not, you're going to find that you're in a good spot with a lot of these players.
No, I definitely agree as well. And it's something that I personally don't want to admit too much, because, again, like, my strategy in CFF, much like your own, Nate, is again, I'm a systems guy, right? Like, I look at the numbers, I look at patterns, right? I'm not a great film watcher. That's just not where my talent lies. And so, like you said, I have to be able to lean on guys like we do at Campus of Canton, guys like Austin, guys like Colin, guys like Matt, Felix, all those guys are high school recruiting team, like, relying on their opinions, their metrics and stuff like that. Like, I gotta be willing to trust that just a little bit more going forward. I had another thought here. Oh, the other thought I had here as well is, like, a lot of people are talking about, like, oh, this is just too much shuffling, right? Especially for guys like us who, you know, we're reliant on systems year to year. But, I mean, like, yeah, we are, yes, there's a lot of shuffling that goes on with the transfer portal, but we've always had coaching changes, right? That's always been a part of fantasy, right? Yeah. There's major upheavals and overhauls every single year with CFF Dynasty. Like, I mean, shoot, like, how many people invested in North Carolina wide receivers because Phil Longo was sitting there, and then all of a sudden he ups and leaves and goes to Wisconsin. Now here we go again, right, where people are investing in Trey Kekahuna, and Phil Longo is now the head coach of Sam Houston. And you're just sitting there like, okay, that's always kind of been a part of the game here. So, I mean, shoot, now with the transfer portal, and we kind of touched on this earlier, Nate, like, guys can follow their coaches, and those are the guys that you are feeling really, mm-hmm, really good about for the most part. Your kind of thoughts on any of that?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, we you know, myself, you, Chevy, and Mike Bainbridge, and everybody else that's been doing this for a long time, we have relied on evaluating systems more than evaluating the player. And that's always been a successful path for CFF, and that's less so these days. I mean, that's changing, and we're going to have to evolve with it. But I think it's fun, man. I think we got to embrace the chaos. It's way more chaotic than the NFL, and it's crazy, but man, it's still a ton of fun, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think somebody once said it best, that college fantasy in general is just NFL fantasy on arcade mode. And the transfer portal is just adding to that. One thing I did want to ask you, Nate, before we kind of dive into some of these names and how we're viewing them going forward, is this is more of just a CFB general question, but it does kind of pertain to what we're talking about here. Do you think we're going to see any kind of rule changes to the transfer portal or NIL moving forward or anything like that might, in like, if you had a crystal ball in front of you, what would you kind of predict happens on that front?
I don't know, man. That's above my pay grade. I think so. Clearly they're doing the, the collective bargaining, revenue sharing type stuff that's going to come into effect next year. So that's obviously going to have an impact. I think at the end of the day, we're still going to see talent move around more than ever. I don't think that they're going to be able to put the guardrails back on the transfer side of things. I mean, once you've kind of opened Pandora's box with that, you can't really stuff these players back in and say, you know, they've tried with the windows and it's been fairly effective. But once you've given unlimited transferability, you're going to have somebody that's on their fourth school in as many years, like Chandler Morris. I mean, that's just going to be the nature of the situation, I think.
I think that they eventually move back to, or one, they have to move this portal window back to past January, past the playoffs and stuff like that, before spring camp start off.
It's so tough because they're trying to walk this line of we're still an academic institution. So it's like you run it back into January, and then by the time these kids enter the portal and actually do their visits, I mean, it's mid to late January before they're committing somewhere, and it's like, oh yeah, we're supposed to be in school. Class started 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it's hard to juggle both and pretend that you're still college athletes, academics come first, when in reality that's just not the real deal.
I mean, that veil got torn off long ago. Like, let's all be honest here.
Right.
I do think that they are going to try. At the very least, I think a vocal minority is going to try to at least get some restrictions back on the number of transfers that some players get, right? Like, bringing back the sit-a-year rule at, like, the second time you transfer and stuff like that, right? Like, I do think that most people kind of agree that these players that are just transferring to different school every single year is not what the transfer portal was really meant to be about, right?
Right.
And like you said, if they want to keep that air of we're an academic institution first, I do think that would actually be one of the ways that they could probably bring that back in a little bit, of saying like, hey, like, if you're going to transfer, academics better be involved in the decision making here at least a second time, right? And then you focus on your school for a year and then you go back to playing football. But that also could lead to that could also lead to 30-year-olds playing football because they transfer every other year, but they only use up 1 year of eligibility each time. But we thought eligibility was already a hellhole. We'll just wait until they implement something like that.
Yeah. I have a tough enough time trying to figure out eligibility now. If I have to guess what years guys set out and if they still get to use it, yeah, that would be a mess. So yeah, we'll see, man. It's gonna be interesting. Let's hit up on some of these specific players that have already hit the portal that,
well, actually,
by the time you release this will be old news.
Actually, I'm going to throw a curveball at you, Nate. I want to talk to you about the players that haven't entered the portal yet, these G5 stars who are still at their respective schools. And because, one, it's easier.
Who are they? It's got to be like six players, right?
I would say it's easier to name these guys than it is to name. I guess I'll throw it out to you, Nate. We'll play a little game here first of, like, do they stay or do they go? Like, again, we're still in the first window here, right? There's still time for these guys to enter. Shoot, they could enter in the spring and everything, so... God, let's see. What is this? Eight names here. I'll throw out to you real quick. You tell me whether you think they end up staying at their respective school or do you think they eventually hit the portal. So, Alonzo Barnett, the quarterback out of James Madison, is he staying or is he going?
I think he stays this year. I think he stays as long as there's not a coaching change this year or next there at Holy Cross. There at JMU, the old Holy Cross coach.
All right, what about Parker Navarro, the quarterback out of Ohio? He's got 1 year of eligibility left after this year. So, like Barnett,
Parker
right?
Stays. He's not.
Barnett's got a couple of years, so he could transfer after next year. Navarro, this is it.
Who was the Ohio quarterback that left and went to Cal? Harris, right?
Oh, yeah, CJ Harris.
Who? Backup, or competing at least with Parker Navarro for the job, goes and becomes the third string quarterback at Cal. And I was like, we were talking about it in Slack, like, why would you do that? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, he's going to get a grad degree from Cal, which is super nice. And maybe they throw him, you know, 40 grand or whatever just to come in and do scout team snaps. I don't know. So
exactly.
I don't think Parker Navarro is enough.
If backup quarterbacks can get can command six digits, like, He could probably make it at least an engineer's salary there.
Yeah, Parker Navarro is interesting though because Tim Albin left, right?
Yes,
and he took a lateral job, right? He went to Charlotte, mm-hmm. right? Isn't that where you landed? Yeah, Charlotte.
That is true.
Had a couple of quarterbacks enter the portal recently, right? So yeah, Parker Navarro would not shock me if we see him, and he's got 30 days. He's got a bigger window. To make that decision.
What about Owen McCown, the quarterback at UTSA?
I think he stays. I think UTSA knows what they've got in him, and they're doing a better job of, I know, raising some funds there. So I think he sticks around.
I have noticed that with UTSA, there hasn't really been a ton of people entering the program.
There hasn't.
I know Kavarian Barnes left, right? But that he was stuck in a committee situation there anyway. But you know, guys like Devin McEwen, Willie McCoy, Chris Carpenter, we haven't really seen any of those guys enter the portal. So, again, like you said, I think that's evidence to show that UTSA has done a pretty good job of making sure these guys are paid. Speaking of guys that were paid, Gio Lopez, quarterback out of South Alabama, at least right now it sounds like he is sticking around at South Alabama. But we've heard that from the likes of Damian Martinez before he transferred in the spring. Nate, do you think he goes back on his word, or do you think he sticks to his commitment as a Jaguar?
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, man. We'll say he sticks around. I think he will.
All right. What about Colton Joseph, the quarterback out of Old Dominion, who is, in previous years, would be a hell of a dynasty asset right now. He's got 3 years of eligibility after this year. Was top eight in CFF quarterbacks in the second half of the season. I never thought we'd see Old Dominion have a on-fire QB like that, but here comes Colton Joseph. Surprisingly not in the portal yet. It felt like he was a guy that absolutely could have entered the portal if he wanted to. Do you think that changes at some point, Nate, or do you think he sticks with the Monarchs?
I think for now he's sixth with them. I'm keeping an eye on what, if anybody wants to take a look at that offensive coordinator that they've got there, that I think's done a good job, who runs that veer and shoot. You know, he studied a lot of what Josh Heupel did. So I'll keep an eye on, see if anybody decides to pull him from ODU, and potentially Joseph could follow. But for right now, I think he stays. And interestingly enough, Colton Joseph's backup scored more points in week 14 than Joseph did in any week this year, I believe. His backup went bonkers in that week. Yep.
So if Colton Joseph does leave, it turns out we might still have a pretty solid asset there with the Monarchs. Nate, you were talking about earlier the running backs and how you don't feel really great about any of them because, like you kind of mentioned, all the incentive is for running backs to move up, get paid by a bigger school. And one thing that I meant to comment on earlier was that the whole position of running back is basically a timer, right? You only have so much time as a running back, both at the pros and the college level. You only have so much tread on the tire. So it's all about exposure, right? So the quicker you can move up from G5 to the P4, get eyeballs on you, get to the NFL kind of deal, the better, right? So we got Aljay Henderson here, who's really the only notable G5 running back that hasn't entered the portal at this point that is also has any kind of eligibility left. Do you think he sticks with the Bulls?
Ooh, I don't know. I feel like if you're not on a team that's making a playoff run, that you're probably already have jumped in the portal, you know, as we record this on the 17th of December. But it would not shock me if he does jump in. Whenever their bowl game ends, if it's still within those portal window, well, I guess actually, when it doesn't matter. Whenever your bowl game ends, you still have a few days, even if it's after the portal window. So, yeah, it would not shock me at all if he looked for a little bit of a payday.
I wouldn't be shocked either. And again, especially with CJ Albana gone after this year, right? He's losing his starting quarterback. Again, we'll see how that program goes in the future. But again, just over the last couple of years, we've seen MAC running backs try to move up. I mean, shoot, Tyrion Stewart, we're losing this year. He's going to USC, apparently. So I agree with you. And we're going to have to wait a while because I think Buffalo Liberty is like one of the last actual bowl games. So we'll find out. This next one's an interesting one because really this is a matter of this player's got multiple options because he could go to the NFL as well. I think he's a legit NFL prospect, but he hasn't made his intentions known yet. That's Ricky White, the wide receiver out of UNLV, obviously a monster for CFF the last 2 years. He's stuck with UNLV once, even though Notre Dame came after him with a bag last year. Do you think they hold on to him one more year? What do you think, Nate?
I would say no. When your options are go NFL, go back to the P4 or stick around, and the team you're sticking around with doesn't even have the same staff.
I was about to say, probably losing Barry Odom, I think, is going to hurt him here.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be surprised if he does stick around in college football, which I don't think he will. I keep waiting for one of those like Shrine Bowl announcements that Ricky White's, you know, accepted an invite type deal. I don't think he will stick around, but if he does, I think it's a situation where he's like, okay, my draft report wasn't what I hoped it would be. I'm going to stick around one more year, but I got to move up, you know, to a competitive P4 program. And then somebody would pay him. You know, he's proven enough.
Agree. At the very least, he might follow Barry Odom to Purdue, right? Like at the very, very least.
So. God, I would rather just stay at UNLV.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that was great, but I'm saying like he, he's going to go somewhere. He's not going to stay at UNLV. Ted Hurst.
Michigan.
Oh, my God, don't. Ted Hurst, wide receiver at Georgia State.
I think, didn't he already announce he's coming back? Or have he just not made an announcement yet?
I'm assuming he's coming back because he's not an NFL prospect, and I haven't seen him enter the transfer portal, so I'm assuming
I think he publicly made an announcement. I think he publicly made an announcement that he's back.
Okay, cool.
You know, he's not leaving, so I think that one looks good for right now.
All right, gotcha. Is it a whatchamacallit? Is that somebody you're excited about next year?
Dude, He's one of those guys, like, for instance, I saw the tweet earlier today that Dante Dowdell for Nebraska is entering the portal. And they're like, the Nebraska running back that had 12 touchdowns. And I was like, excuse me? He had 12 touchdowns? I thought he had like three or four. Ted Hurst is like the G5 receiver version of that, where it was like week 12. And I finally just like look at, you know, rankings. I'm like, excuse me? This guy is like a top 10 receiver? Yeah, I mean, he's been good. He ate up targets over there. So would not surprise me if he's able to do that again.
Alrighty, now let's talk about some of these quarterbacks that are, or all these players that are in the portal. And one name that's not on our show sheet, but I do want to throw out to you real quick, Nate. Not that this is a commitment announcement, but Matt Sluka is visiting Memphis and has some percentage, or what do they call them, RPMs or whatever, on three to commit to Memphis. Is it me or is that gross? Like that's... That's not what we want from Memphis, like, at all, right?
I don't know what the situation is. I mean, because he's also visiting Liberty.
I'll take Liberty.
Which seems, from a system standpoint, from, you know, this is a quarterback that threw 43% completion percentage last year in four games or whatever, three games with UNLV. Small sample size, but we know we've got a big enough sample size. He's not a good passer. Memphis is a very strange, you know, landing spot, but I'm here for it because I just want to see, it's kind of like a train wreck. I just want to see what happens. Like, I'll rubberneck that situation all day long because he does not seem to fit that system whatsoever, but they got enough money where they can pay for somebody like him and see what works out. So Liberty, definitely a better fit for his skill set.
I don't want him at Memphis. That's going to kill any of the wide receivers they have there, which as frustrating as
Rock Who's Taylor, the wide receiver you love at Memphis?
Well, okay. Like, let's not break it down there, but I'm saying like that system allows for a top wide receiver. As frustrating as Rock Taylor was this year, like he still had almost 100 targets.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You
just couldn't find the end zone.
You get used to a pocket passer like Seth Hennigan for 4 years. It's just your eyes are trained to think that that's what they want. That's what they're going to have. So it would definitely be a shock to the system to see Matt Sluka of all players.
And also it would kill the run of running backs that Memphis has had recently, right? If you got a dual threat quarterback back there, especially one that runs as much as Sluka does, right? Like that would just kill any hope we would have at, you know, somebody coming in after Mario Anderson. So
it would make it a challenge for them to replicate all the success they've had lately.
But to be fair, again, these systems can only be elite for so long. Anyway, who do you want to start with here? I know who you want to start with. You want to talk about the guy that's probably going to be the quarterback for your Sooners next year. What's up with John Mateer? Again, yes, I am treating Wazoo as a G5 team. Sue me. That's the level of competition they played this year. So I'm treating them like a G5 team. So Wazoo. John Mateer, probably going to Oklahoma here. This is a pretty solid landing spot, right? Like, even if I don't love the idea of Mateer going away from a Mountain West schedule here, like, if you're going to put him in the Power Four, I think there's probably not a better landing spot with him than going to a school that's historically been great for offense and also following his OC.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as a Sooner fan here, I would be excited. And you know, the ink's not on the paper yet, right? I mean, he's currently, as we speak, in Norman visiting. We're hoping, you know, Sooner Nation's kind of hoping that it's a done deal to follow his OC and his QB coach to Norman. But, you know, we've seen all the reports that Miami's gonna do whatever it takes, you know, to pull off another Cam Ward scenario here. So, you know, this is a great example. I mean, think of, like, we were worried he might get beat out by Zevi Eckhouse, you know, 4 months ago. And now this is the number one overall player in the portal on both On3 and 247. You know, it's just crazy
he might be the best paid quarterback next year, like, given the bidding war that Oklahoma and Miami are about to probably get into over here.
Yep. I mean, he's going to be making probably close to like 3.5 or so million next year. It's just
I 100% believe that. If a guy like Eric Singleton's commanding $2 million, like I can't even imagine what some of these quarterbacks are going for here. And again, if as a very much an owner of John Vitier in every dynasty league that I can, I think Oklahoma and Miami battling out for him is probably the best case scenario. Like I think that if I guess
both of them are great spots.
Yeah. Like I this is one of those times where I feel like you're kind of getting lucky with the portal.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people you know, in some of the Discord channels and stuff like that, once this kind of hit that Oklahoma's really, really likely landing spot for him, everybody's like, "Oh, I want to sell every bit of my Mateer shares and all this." Like they're just totally off the Mateer boat. And I'm just like, guys, he's still following Ben Arbuckle. You realize that, like, Ben Arbuckle was there for Bailey Zappe. He made Austin Reed incredible. He made Cam Ward incredible well before he got to Miami. He made John Mateer incredible. Like, I get he's got an SEC schedule, but you know what? They're still going to have to score points in the SEC. It's not, this is not the same situation that Oklahoma was stuck with Seth Luttrell as the offensive coordinator this year. So
I will say
it's a solid landing spot.
I'm looking at Oklahoma's schedule next year, and obviously it's so difficult to tell exactly what these defenses are going to look like next year, right? But I will say I don't love it. Again, you got Michigan.
It's the toughest schedule in the country. I mean, Oklahoma, Auburn, and Florida
Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, LSU. These are all, maybe not LSU, but those are all defenses that were, you know, well above average this year. Now,
right.
We'll see what the NFL does to some of these teams and stuff like that, but I still remain a little worried about Mateer with that schedule. But
I'm of the belief that I think Miami is actually the best landing spot of where he could go if he's leaving Washington State, just because you do get a good OC, you get a soft schedule, you get Miami's going to put players around him, you're going to have good offensive line. There's a lot of strong factors if he does actually end up in Miami.
All righty. I'm not going to stick with the quarterbacks here. We'll hop back to some of these guys, Nate, but I definitely want to talk about some of these elite, or at least what we thought were going to be elite dynasty assets in a couple of running backs here. Fluff Bothwell leaving South Alabama, currently expected to go somewhere in the SEC. There's talks of Auburn, Ole Miss, Tennessee, all three of those teams looking at him. And then Ahmad Hardy, the running back at UL Monroe, who hit over 1,000 yards this year. Ole Miss currently the favorite. We do know that Ole Miss is shopping around for some other running backs as well. They just added Kewon Lacy, so maybe that's not as great of a landing spot. But what are your kind of thoughts on Bothwell and Hardy? Like, is this going to be an easy stock down situation for them both, or are there landing spots here where you think that they could probably earn back some of the value they were going to have had they stayed?
This isn't a situation like Mateer where they're following their very well proven offensive coordinator. I mean, if they end up in the SEC, you know, it's going to be stock down. To what degree, I don't know. I mean, it kind of depends. Ole Miss, I swear to God, I feel like Ole Miss is in on every single running back that has ever hit the portal. It's like, oh, well, you have to take a visit to Ole Miss first as a rite of passage once you enter the portal, to make sure that they don't want you first.
Do you want to hear my theory on that, actually?
Yes.
Dude, Lane's trolling. Or, like, Lane is actively making the entire country work harder for every one of their transfers. He doesn't have an interest in half these guys that he has visit, but he wants to drive up the price on them, right? Like, he just floats out these numbers and gets these numbers inside of these kids' heads, and then it forces other schools to pay more for them. Like, I really think that Lane doesn't give a crap about the health of the sport in that regard, right? Yeah. Like, he's always been one of the schools where he drove Ole Miss to be one of the schools that is willing to throw out more money than pretty much anybody else, right? So I think that he brings in a ton of these guys. I think he brings in a ton of these guys to simply just make the lives of, you know, like Georgia, Oklahoma, like all of these other schools that don't really want to get into bidding wars, but they feel like they're being forced to by the likes of, you know, Texas, Miami, and teams like that.
Yeah. So two thoughts I have on both these two. We'll just kind of pair the two of them together. I prefer Ahmad Hardy over Fluff Bothwell. If, you know, just in a vacuum, like if they were to go to the same school, I think Hardy would beat out Bothwell, like that, mm-hmm. that type of situation. I also, like, is there any chance that since Alabama lost Justice Hayes that they would maybe get into this if both these guys are just dead set on being in the SEC?
I don't know what DeBoer's, like, thought is on the yeah. portal, right? Like, I have, for some reason...
He took a
like,
bunch of them to Washington.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if Alabama feels the need to go and grab a guy from the G5, right? Like, I feel like Alabama will be targeting guys...
Yeah,
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I mean, Georgia, I know for a fact, like, Kirby's philosophy is that he heavily targets a lot of guys who have played in the SEC, right? Like, guys he's played against, guys that he knows can kind of handle that SEC grind, and he only really goes after, you know, G5 or lower P4 guys when
yeah.
he thinks that there's, like, a transcendent talent there, right?
Yeah.
And so I think Alabama might be in the same boat there, and both Will and Hardy are great. I don't know if that is DeBoer or Alabama's mindset, if they think that both Will and Hardy are good enough to kind of transcend that. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish, man, it would be nice if we saw them, you know, not go to Auburn or Ole Miss like they're projected to. I mean, it's like tough to find landing spots in the SEC.
I feel like those are pretty solid spots. Like, again, we know that, like, again, Jarquez Hunter, I don't know what's up with Hugh Freeze, where he just refused to commit to Jarquez Hunter, so that's probably going to be frustrating if either one of them go to Auburn. But Tennessee, man, yeah. like, if they go there and they pull a Dylan Sampson, right, and they just transcend above the rest of that running back room, and, like, I like Bishop. I don't think he's a guy
why can't one of these guys go to Tennessee? What a great spot that would be.
Like, Tennessee would be solid. Again, I kind of like the Alabama call as well. Like, they need bodies in that running back room as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What about some of these elite receivers? Oh, you got any more thoughts? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was saying, what about some of these kind of elite receivers that are elite in a CFF sense, right? Because, again, Devontae Ross, Eric Rivers, two guys that were, you know, top of the CFF stats this year. Again, if I look it up real quick here. Yeah, Eric Rivers, wide receiver 6. And
both of them are top 10.
Yeah, Ross is, Rivers 6, Ross 7. So again, top 7 yep. wide receivers here. Rivers is being talked about between Penn State and Miami. I think we both would prefer Miami by a country mile in that scenario. I think he would.
Yes. Because he's a slot, and he would slide right into that Restrepo spot. So, I mean, unless what's interesting is Miami's like into all these different slots. They're into Rivers, they're into mm-hmm. Casey Concepcion, and then now with the news that we heard earlier today, they're going to be into Zach Branch over at USC. So it's like they got three guys that they're all kind of vying for that spot. But it was interesting because I thought they were going to, like, lock up Rivers in his visit, and he didn't, and he mm-hmm. continues to so maybe both him and Miami are kind of looking around elsewhere.
Yeah, that could be fair. And then Ross as well. Like, I thought I was so excited to have Ross as one of the guys on the list of, like, guys who are still at their schools, and literally the next day he enters the portal. So, I mean, he's already been at the SEC level once, right? Where he was actually,
what was he at before?
Kentucky. He's at Kentucky. Like, two or three years ago or something like that. He's got one more year of eligibility now. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
So, given Kentucky's woes at wide receiver, I mean, shoot, they lost Key. They lost Berrian Brown. Maybe they take a pass at Devontae Ross.
You know where he's at right now as we speak, right?
Where is Ross as we speak? I have not kept up with him.
I shouldn't say as we speak. Wednesday, he'll be in Norman.
Oh, interesting. That could be fun.
Oklahoma is targeting, like, every G5 wide receiver there is out there because they are too cheap to pay up for any P4 ones, and they have, like, two wide receivers on roster right now. So, yeah. We'll see.
They're kind of bargain bin hunting. That was something that, like, I know I've discussed with some of my Georgia buddies as well, of like, because Georgia needs X wide receivers as well. And yeah. Like we literally don't, we have one X wide receiver on our roster right now. He's a true freshman. Like we need some big body guys to play on the outside. And we're basically discussing of like, what would you rather have? Would you, if like the likes of like, you know, a Cam Coleman were to enter the portal, would you rather pay, you know, $2+ million for him? Or would you rather take some shots on a guys like, you know, Dane Key, CJ Daniels, J. Michael Sturdivant, and go that route? I guess, again, we got time here. Right. Like, if you were a general manager running your college team, like, what would you rather do?
I think we're kind of transitioning into this era of, you know, like, this sounds bad, and I don't mean it this way at all, but like, you've heard of the studs and duds, you know, auction style drafting for fantasy football, right? You pay up for like two or three guys you really, really want, and then the rest of your roster, you're just getting guys, you know, at a bargain bin price. I mean, I almost feel like, now Georgia may not have to do that because they're Georgia and they go to the title game every other year. So, but like other programs, you know, you have to spend your money on the spots that really, really count, that you can't miss on: quarterback, tackle, you know, and guys in the trenches on the defensive line, and guys that can get to the quarterback. So once you've kind of, you know, blown a lot of your budget there, you it's hard to say, hey, let's go spend $1.5 million on a Georgia Tech wide receiver that has you have an incredible season. You know what I mean? It's just like, Singleton's really good, but like, you know, he's not Jeremiah Smith.
I would say, like, Singleton's really good, but he's not a game changer, right? He's not going to be the difference between your team getting to 10 wins or not, right?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, the gap between Eric Singleton and Eric Rivers is smaller than whoever the best offensive tackle is in the country, and, you know, and some guy that you can afford for a fraction of the price. Like, there's going to be a drastic difference in those two. Of course, for most programs, that they have the best offensive tackles, they don't let them get to the portal. So that's kind of a whole nother thing. Wide receivers, I mean, there's just a bunch of productive receivers that end up in the portal each year. So I think you can find guys if you really scout well, you can make it work.
Here's the problem with wide receivers, and yes, I am stereotyping here, but it's true. If you've ever hung around any football team for any extended period of time, wide receivers are divas. Very much, I don't want to say they inflate their value, but like, they are not afraid to let it be known that they want more money and that they think they're being underpaid if they think that. So that's another thing programs just have to deal with. Of, like you said, the reality is, like, a wide receiver is not going to be the difference between like how many wins you get on the season, but to that wide receiver, they sure are. So you got to kind of find that balance of playing within your own reality versus their reality. Anyway, Let me ask you this.
One guy that's not on this list of G5 to P4 receivers that I was curious to get your thoughts on. What are your thoughts on Reggie Virgil going from Miami, Ohio to Texas Tech? Love it. Don't care.
The rumors are that, like, Virgil got paid like, what, $700,000 or something like that? That blows my
mind.
Maybe even
more, from what I've heard. Yes,
that blows my mind.
He had all these visits set up. Oklahoma was one of them. He had all these visits lined up, and then Texas Tech just like kicked the door down and went like above and beyond by a million miles. And he said, "Okay, I'm done. I don't need to go on any visits. I happen to love Lubbock all of a sudden." So, but I mean, it's a situation where, I think he looked good at times. He had a lot of drop issues there at Miami, Ohio. But like, from what I watched of him, right? I mean, he's a big body, deep threat guy, averaged 20 yards a catch, you know, like game breaker type guy. There's a school that happens to be needing really bad some wide receivers and has a history of being very productive in the pass game, and that's Texas Tech, you know, and bringing back a quarterback, lost their OC, but brought in a nice one with Mac Leftwich. Like, I don't know, it looks like a really interesting landing spot for him.
Oh no, it's an interesting landing spot. And let me say, if you're gonna pay a receiver like that $700K,
he's gonna get some snaps, isn't he?
You better be ready to incorporate him as a big game plan, because like one, I hope the receivers you have on roster are getting that much. Otherwise, you are setting a really, really bad cultural example for the rest of your team there.
They'll even go to Texas A&M like your five star that just happened with Mike Hudson.
Exactly, right? So like I think that number tells us that they see something that they want to get involved in, right?
Yeah.
They lose, like you said, they lose Micah Hudson. Josh Kelly's probably off to the draft after this year. Don't really know what's going on with their slot receivers there. They got to rebuild that receiver room, and if they think Vigil is that guy, more power to them. And I'll definitely keep an eye on it. Some other names we can throw out here: Caden Salter, Liberty, hasn't picked a destination yet, but he's had a couple of interesting ones there. Surprisingly, not a lot of talk. Not Auburn, but you know, Colorado, that could be a ton of fun.
Yeah, that seems like a good fit, actually.
Yeah, I could definitely see that as well, and I think that would be
Syracuse was the other one, right?
Syracuse, yes.
And I think Indiana was even thrown out. That seems weird. I don't picture him in the Big Ten. But Colorado and Syracuse could be real fun for him. Like, I feel like that's a scenario where maybe his stock could rebound a little bit.
What about a transfer here that's not so fun? In fact, I was reacting like the Riddler, where I was like, this is not how this was supposed to go. Chandler Morris, quarterback out of North Texas, could have gone to Oklahoma State, been Mike Gundy's new quarterback. I think he would have fit perfectly in that system. It would have been gorgeous. He could have gotten DT Sheffield to follow him, you know, play in that slot, replace Brennan Presley. It would have been golden. No, he's going to Virginia for some reason.
Yeah. My thoughts on this are, one, I don't know that Oklahoma State was going to offer him. I know he visited, and that could have been fun. I know he visited or had planned to visit Memphis. That also could have been really fun. You know, it was like, oh, okay, Chandler Morris gets it. Like, he knows a good system when he sees it. And, you know, he was at Oklahoma. He was at, what was it, TCU, North Texas. You know, like, he may have been at SMU for like a hot minute. I can't remember. He's been all over Texas and Oklahoma. But, yeah, Virginia's weird, right? He's like slightly less version of Anthony Clanger that we just saw there. Like their game is very similar. It's kind of strange in that sense, right? Him and Darian Minso were the two surprise kind of transfer moves, right? Minso going from Tulane to Duke, and like that was a little interesting.
Yeah, I think Minso could work out at Duke, because I think a lot of people kind of point out that Duke passed the ball a crap ton this past year, right? The problem is they have Malik Murphy, a quarterback who cannot pass the ball. Mintz is a much better, more refined passer. And again, them playing the ACC there, I actually think Mintz could be decently solid there at Duke. Again, he's not a statue. He can run. It's not really his go-to or anything like that. Like, I'm not saying he's, you know, Ken Salter over here, but I think Duke could be pretty interesting for Mintz. I am not sure really what to expect with Morris at Virginia. I don't like that staff there. They killed Brendan Armstrong his final year, so
I'll push back a little bit on Minsa. I mean, I know a lot of people on campus can't really like him. I know Mox likes him. Felix has got a serious man crush on Darian Minsa, and they were all shocked that, you know, he just settled for Duke, which, you know, clearly the kid is very intelligent, from Tulane to Duke. He'll probably be at Northwestern and Stanford in the next couple of years. But I watched him play a couple times, and I came away both times. I mean, he played Oklahoma this year. I get it, you know, defensive mismatch, and they were overpowered and stuff like that. But I watched him play a couple of other games. Man, Garrett Green just broke off like a 75-yard touchdown run.
Nice.
But I watched Minsa play a couple other times later in the season. And I was just like, I don't know. Nothing that I see that stood out to me that made sense, that a lot of people were saying if he goes into the portal that he's going to get like really, really big time, you know, P5, SEC, Big Ten type offers. So I actually think Duke is about right for him, in my opinion.
I'm with you. I wasn't really expecting him. I do think that there was, I think that I can believe that LSU might have been interested in him if they're going after the likes of Michael Van Buren. Right. Again, it's within the state there. He's a solid backup for Nussmeier. They kind of play decently similarly. So I could have believed that one, but yeah. In terms of everybody else, like Duke, I agree, feels like it. When I watched Mensah, I basically saw a first year starter, right? Like, to me, he's a solid first year starter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I didn't think he was anything transcendent. I do think he was probably one of the better quarterbacks in the AAC in terms of like where I think he could end up being. Like, I was definitely seeing some flashes of like, okay, he might be one of the better passers in this conference. But I mean, shoot, clearly, I mean, he beat out Ty Thompson and Kai Horton, like two guys. I mean, Horton. Well, Horton had the experience of the system, and Thompson had the talent pedigree behind him. Now, you know, it's a couple of years from high school, so how much can you really put into that? But he beat out two legit guys to get to that point. So I think there was something there,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's a bad player,
but go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of surprise, winning the jobs, first year starters that then transfers to a surprising location. How about your boy Danny O'Neill?
Boy, this is a player that's lost some luster for me. Just all around.
San Diego State to Wisconsin, and not Phil Longo's Wisconsin.
We're
talking about Jeff Grimes, Wisconsin.
Oh my God, this is getting from bad for worse, and my take of him being a foundational dynasty player is looking worse.
He's in that same boat as Van Buren too, right? I mean, this is a guy that committed to Wisconsin, and all, you know, right at the same time, all the buzz that Billy Edwards was.
Oh, Billy Edwards has committed.
I know, but I'm saying like Danny O'Neill did commit first, but there was enough. There was enough meat on the bone that it looked like Wisconsin was gonna take another quarterback, and Danny O'Neill was gonna be a guy that just sits for a year, and that's. And that's crazy, right? I mean, you go from
what's like super attractive about Wisconsin right now. Let me, like, I'm being real here. Like, does Luke Fickell make it another year?
That's a great town. I don't know.
But like, does Luke Fickell make it another year?
I don't know, man. It's that's turned into be a tough job with the addition of the West Coast teams. Wisconsin kind of fell into that bucket where they're definitely not, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State level, and they've been passed over by, you know, the likes of Oregon and potentially even, you know, USC and Washington. So yeah, I mean that's a tough spot, man. Yeah, Jeff Grimes is a bad offensive coordinator. That's a bad hire. That's a get yourself fired kind of hire. Like, I think Brian Harsin is gonna get what's his face fired over at Cal. Like, you know, he's been there forever, the Cal coach. So he's been there for like 8 or 9 years. That's a get yourself fired kind of hire. And I think Jeff Grimes is that same kind of hire for that Wisconsin staff. This is probably the end of the road.
And with all respect to Billy Edwards and Danny O'Neill, but those are two quarterback grabs out of the portal that are get yourself fired grabs out of the portal. Like, if you whiffed on the likes of, like, you know, Tyler Van Dyke, and I forget who they had the year before. Like, they whiffed twice on quarterback.
Tanner
Mordecai. They whiffed twice on quarterback out of the portal. And you go and grab Billy Edwards and Danny O'Neill to be your guys? Like, boy, I better be wrong about those guys. Like, or like I said, Fickell's going to be fired. Like, there's no doubt about that in my mind. Running backs. Let's kind of hit on some of these, like, I don't want to say lesser guys, but, you know, not as elite options for CFF this past year. What do you think of CJ Campbell going from FAU to Rutgers? Again, I like Antoine Raymond, but, like, I'd be switching my allegiance to Campbell here because he was a blue chip prospect at Florida State, went to FAU, ripped off tons of explosive plays down there. I think he'd be solid at Rutgers. What do you think?
I can dig it, man. I mean, we know Greg Schiano likes to ride you know, his best guy, and I think that CJ Campbell's gonna make a case for that. I know they still have Sam Brown, but he's never healthy. Raymond, you know, a little bit of a smaller guy, but I've liked CJ Campbell even before. Like, I just noticed whenever he transferred from Florida State fans were like bummed about it. And I was like, wait, why are you guys bummed about losing like your fourth string running back? A lot of people there in Tallahassee thought he he had the goods and just never got a real chance with that staff there at Florida State. And that turned out to be exactly the case at FAU. So, yeah, I could see him translating to being a nice option there at Rutgers. I think that's got some real chance to be solid.
I want to know the connection that he has to Rutgers, though, because transferring from Florida State to FAU, you know, you're staying the same geographically. And so, if he transferred back up to the Power Four, I'd be like, okay, yeah, maybe, you know, Florida, Miami, stay somewhere in the Southeast. I could see that. No, going to Rutgers. We're going Big Ten. We're going to Jersey. That's let me tell you right now that Fort Lauderdale and New Jersey are very different places.
So yeah, that is weird. I
have to imagine there's some kind of coaching connection there or something.
Yeah, I just looked up the Rutgers running back coach. His name is Demary Shaw, and it's his fifth season at Rutgers. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the connection is.
Let's talk about another guy here that I know you liked, Nate. And we talked about it during the season that if this guy got out of Ben Arbuckle's system and maybe went somewhere where, you know, he could potentially be a featured back, we like the talent. But Wayshon Parker, as you kind of note here in the show sheet here, Arizona or Utah are his two main options. This is your guy, Nate, so I'll let you take the lead here. What do you think about those landing spots? And is this an actual stock up in the transfer portal for once?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a slight jump up in competition from where Washington State's schedule was to the Big 12 here. But I mean, I probably prefer Utah over Arizona, just excuse me, because we know Jason Beck the last couple of years with LaQuint Allen and then with Eli Sanders has proven that he can, you know, he can support a nice, even though they're going to run the ball there, he can support, good running back production. So I like that. Even Arizona wouldn't be that bad. I mean, he'll probably be playing, you know, a little having to go uphill there at Arizona because I don't think they're going to be very good next year. But still, he catches the ball really, really well. So I think either one of those are solid landing spots, and I probably prefer him there than I do Washington State.
I'm trying to think of the competition he would have in those rooms, right? Because
Mike Mitchell, Mike Washington are the two at Utah. Well, Micah Bernard actually technically has a year left.
I would say Micah Bernard could come back.
Has not. Yeah, he has not announced either way. I don't know what's left at Arizona. I guess they got Riscano.
I would think Riscano's kind of your main guy there because Conley's done
it.
After this.
Conley year. And Luke, yeah, and Speedy Luke is gone. So, yep, that's it.
One scenario we were talking about earlier because this kind of got thrown out on the timeline recently, but Malik Sherrod, the former running back at Fresno State, a guy that we were all kind of concerned would jump up to the Power Four after basically quiet quitting this season after he got banged up a little bit. Talks of him going to Boise State, and that's both good and bad. Obviously, if you're a Sire Gaines or, you know, Breezy Dubar shareholder there, but if you're a Malik Sherrod manager, I think that that's a pretty solid spot, at least in your mind, as long as you expect him to stay healthy, because he stays in the Mountain West where we know he's been productive. You get probably behind one of the best offensive lines in the Mountain West, right? You got a great system there for running backs. And as I was talking with Chris K earlier, a lot of people are going to be, will say oh, that's just going to be too crowded of a room. Like Gaines is a good talent. Dubar is a good talent. You throw Sherrod in there, it's going to become a committee or anything like that. I pointed out to K when we were discussing things that when GNT and Helani were both healthy towards the end of 2023, both of those backs were eating. And so, I think there's a world where Sherrod and one of Gaines or Dubar, likely whoever's healthy at the time, could both be very solid backs for CFF. Because even a lot of people will say, none of them are going to be Ginty. Yeah, obviously, nobody's going to be Ginty. But even if you got 50% of Ginty, you're still looking at a top 30 running back in CFF. So I like the spot, but I remember, Nate, you kind of chimed in a little bit that you weren't as excited, so I'm curious to hear the devil's advocate on this.
Yeah, I mean, I like it in the sense that, or at least I can support it in the sense that one, it's still, you know, it's not like he's moving up to the SEC. So level of competition is obviously the exact same. They're in the same conference. But, and I do like the fact that his ceiling remains, you know, really high, because the idea is if he takes the RB1 job or if another running back gets hurt and his volume goes up, it's a great spot to be. You want the RB1 for Boise. Unfortunately, I think he goes from where, you know, he's been the best running back on his team to where now he's the second, potentially even the third best running back at Boise. Now, if he does go there, there's a very good chance that Dubar or Sire Gaines transfers out. You know, that's just how these things work. When one guy comes in, it usually means another guy's on his way out the door or gets pushed out the door. So I don't hate it in that sense. It's just, boy, I'm kind of with Kay. It's kind of a crowded backfield there if all things were to stay the same, which they never do.
Real quick, I'll throw together Ishmael Mahdi and Lee Beebe, both in the transfer portal. Beebe committed to Indiana for a minute, has since reopened his commitment there. Do you have hope for either of those guys finding good landing spots, Nate, or do you think that it'll take a lot of luck?
A lot of luck. I think Mahdi's most likely going to Arkansas. So I don't love that, right? I mean, it's okay.
I mean, to be fair, that running back's room's cleared out. Like Russell's right, gone, yeah, Dominion's gone.
There's a chance for opportunity there, but boy, that's a big jump, right? I mean, that's a big jump. That's having the same Bothwell and Hardy jump, but probably not quite as talented of a player. Texas Tech's like looking for everybody in the portal, like Quentin Joyner. They want him. I saw somebody else was recently
Roman Hemby,
a really strong Roman Hemby. Yeah, Roman Hemby. So Texas Tech's clearly won some people. They've got Texas State's old or former OC there who coached Mahdi. It just seems like, well, that could work, right? Like, why don't you take a look?
I can see that.
Take a look and see if maybe whoever gave that Reggie Virgil deal, you know, see if maybe they're available to have a little conversation with, because that seemed to be fruitful. So, I don't have a whole lot of hope. I mean, Lee Beebe did the whole, you know, Homer Simpson's dad thing where he walked in, set his hat down, grabbed it, turned around, walked back out of Indiana. But if those are the programs they're looking at, it's probably going to be tough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's run through the position that basically we've seen over the last couple of years has been very feast or famine when it comes to these guys transferring up from G5 up to the Power 4 here. We already talked about Devontae Ross and Eric Rivers, but other wide receivers that we could discuss here. Let's talk about the two newest members of the Michigan State Spartans here. Omari Kelly, the former wide receiver out of Middle Tennessee State, and Krishan McCray, the former wide receiver out of Kent State. Nate, I know you're a decent fan of Aiden Childs there at Michigan State. Do you like the fact they're kind of loading him up with some weapons here to work with, or do you think that it'll be the same old next year?
I mean, I guess this is okay for Childs, right? I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but that both these guys are Big Ten level. I mean, we've seen Omari Kelly in the P4. He was at Auburn initially and never saw the field. I get it that things can change, right? Ollie Jennings was at the P4 and he came back and was a P4 starter, but I don't know, man. For Omari Kelly and Krishan McCray, this is a huge stock down, in my opinion. They go from clear, you know, wide receiver one on their own team, you know, and getting really strong volume because there just wasn't any other options, even though they played for bad teams, to now they're going to be on what's likely a not a very good team. And this is a staff, you know, if you think back to their time at Oregon State, Jonathan Smith and Brian Lindgren, I mean, this is a staff that had a tough time supporting a good fantasy wide receiver one, let alone a wide receiver two or three. And with Nick Marsh on that team, unless he transfers out, I just don't see that there's a scenario where either one of these guys are the wide receiver one at Michigan State. And if you're telling me I'm getting the wide receiver two or three at Michigan State, I'm out on that.
No, I'm definitely along the lines with you there. Let's see, who else could we discuss here? DT Sheffield, one of our boys that we were on before anybody else and then got off of and then had to get right back on him this year. But he's back in the portal. Again, my dream scenario was him and Rodgers going to Oklahoma State. That would have been absolutely gorgeous. There's still a chance that Sheffield goes to Oklahoma State. But obviously
they've had some interest in him.
I would say he's not going to follow Rodgers anymore, but some of these schools you got listed here, Arkansas, Rutgers, Oklahoma State. I like the Oklahoma State landing spot for sure. What are your thoughts, Nate?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that Oklahoma State was interested in him. That could be fun. You know, obviously with Brennan Presley moving on, he could maybe fill that kind of role. I know for sure he's visited Arkansas and was planning to visit Rutgers. So I tossed those on the show sheet because I you know, if you're actually taking the time to go visit, then there's definitely some mutual interest there. So I don't know. I think he was kind of in the perfect spot, right? That Eric Morris offense, who had previously recruited him at Washington State, you know, they're going to trail by 30 points every game, and they're just going to sling it around the field.
And then Damon Ward gets injured.
right. Yeah. It would take a lot for me to have a whole lot of faith in him this coming year if he lands at Arkansas or Rutgers. I could buy Oklahoma State, though. Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely the most exciting amongst the bunch there. Arkansas is already loading up with receivers. They grabbed Cameron Shanks from UAB already. One name that I know that got some buzz, one, when he entered the portal, but two, a lot of people really liked his landing spot. But Chase Soule, the former East Carolina wide receiver there, was kind of splitting duties with Winston Wright and then some of the other East Carolina wide receivers this year, kind of going Smith. Back and forth. Yeah, Smith. He lands at Iowa State. Iowa State losing their top two receivers there in Jalen Nold and a top 13 CFF wide receiver in Jaden Higgins there. Do you think that Soule could be that guy to help replace those guys, Nate? Or do you think this is going to be one of those scenarios where we kind of overdraft him because we know the name, but it's probably going to be some guys on Iowa State's roster that probably step up first?
What's funny when I read that he was landing at Iowa State was that I watched two ECU games this year, and one I was kind of half watching. I legit thought Chase Soule was like 5'9", 174 pounds. I thought he was just like a little slot guy. And so I was like, that's not going to be very fun at Iowa State. And then I look at him like, holy crap, he's like 6'4", 200. I was like, he fits the mold, right, of what Iowa State, you know, Matt Campbell has, you know, made very, very productive and has really fed over time. So I get the fact if people want to invest in him in best ball drafts especially, and can probably get him a little bit cheaper earlier in the spring, you know, and those types of drafts before word gets out during camp, I think there's something there. He definitely fits the mold. What are your thoughts on it? I know Moxie's real high on it.
I mean, like, I like Chase Soule, right? Again, I was a little bit off of him during the offseason because I kept hearing that Winston Wright would be kind of the main guy there. It turns out nobody was really the guy at East Carolina this year, but yeah. I think Soule is
a guy. He wasn't very good in the two games I watched. He just wasn't very good.
No. But, like, Soule is a guy that I think is one of these guys that can translate up to the Power Four. It's just a matter of can he become a 100-target guy in the Cyclones offense? Jaden Higgins came up from the FCS and did it. Now, granted, it took him 2 years, but even still, like,
it's pretty good last year too, though, at the end of the year.
Oh, especially. Yeah, no, for sure. Like, again, yeah. But that's the question, right? Does Soule need that extra year, right? Is it going to be like, oh, he might come along towards the end of the year, or does he hit the ground running when he gets to Iowa State this year? I'm going to lean towards the latter because that's just kind of the pattern I've seen. Like, I think it will take a year for him to really kind of get there. But otherwise, like, I like the landing spot.
Yeah, of everybody on this list, right, that we've discussed today, Rivers, Amari Kelly, DT Sheffield, Cam Shanks, Krishan McCray, you know, guys that we know where we've kind of got an idea of where they've landed or where they've visited so far. He's the one that I would probably be most interested in out of that group, even though I'm not necessarily thinking he's the best player out of that group, but just it's kind of cut and paste with him and what we've seen from Higgins and, you know, a handful of other guys that have all gone on to the NFL before him that fit that big bodied boundary type receiver there for the Cyclones.
I definitely agree. What about Joseph Williams, a hot name towards the end of the year? He's transferred in. You got Michigan listed here. I didn't see that he had visited Michigan. Is that like
a it's just a question mark. They offered and supposedly are fairly interested.
Yeah. Gotcha. You know who probably should be interested in here if they're going to offer a bunch of G5 wide receivers? Oklahoma. I think Joseph Williams would be fantastic for Oklahoma.
Dude, he's 2 hours up the turnpike, right? There in Tulsa. It's like all Brent does is offer G5 wide receivers, it feels like. So as soon as he entered the portal, I was like, all right, let's see what happens here. And then nothing happened. And apparently Michigan very interested. And I want to say there's a couple other like Big Ten level teams that have a lot of interest in him. So definitely going to be a big jump in competition. But boy, he looked good those last few games, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
That game I watched with ECU where it was against ECU and Tulsa and Chase Sewell did not stand out to me. Joseph Williams certainly did.
All righty. That pretty much kind of covers most of the names I had on the sheet here. One thing I did want to ask you, Nate, before we get out of here, you said back in week 10 in your Pulse of the CFF Nation article, which by the way, if you guys have not read those articles, you should go back and read each and every one of them. One, because Nate provides a ton of great insight in them. Two, some of Nate's predictions are hilariously wrong, and it is very fun to read them 10 weeks later.
I was going to say, I'm terrified for what you're about to bring up here.
but no, one thing I think was interesting to kind of bring up, and I think it's something we can talk about here during portal season, was we talk about all these guys, you know, coming up from the G5 to the Power 4 and how it's not translating and everything. But you kind of pointed out that a lot of these FCS transfers are actually working out pretty decently, right? And you had a really good list here. Mario Anderson, Bashaul Tootin, Trey Stewart, Cam Scadabo, Desmond Reed, Braden Sloan, Kwali Conley. All of these guys were top 32 running backs in CFF at the time that you wrote that article. And now, granted, you're specifically talking about running backs here, but
right.
I don't know how much research you've put into some of these FCS transfers coming up, Nate. Do you have any thoughts on any of these guys? Any kind of early maybe sleepers for people, because people love sleepers?
Yeah, no, I honestly haven't had a chance to really dive deep into the FCF stuff, because a lot of it's going to depend on like landing spot, right?
Oh, for sure.
Like, you know, I mean, for instance, we've talked about it, like Higgins over at Iowa State when he transferred up, you know, from FCS. It was like, he caught some buzz. He fit that mold. And same with Elijah Surratt whenever he landed at JMU, right? And we knew that was a good spot for them to be. So I'll probably wait and see where some of these guys land. Now, some of the guys that you've got on a couple of guys you've got listed here, I have heard about and I've seen a little bit of film just because I was interested in some of the landing spots. The Malachi Hosley, I'm not sure if it's Hosley or Hosley, who's a running back at Penn, another guy, and I lean on Moxley, Chris Moxley, over at Campus Canton a lot when it comes to the FCS guys, because he actually is such a sicko degenerate that he follows a lot of that stuff. And, you know, it's, I believe he was previously at Penn State. I want to say I may be talking totally just out of my butt on this, but I think he was at Penn State for like a hot minute, transferred out, ends up at Penn, and now he's transferring back up. Maybe like the Virginia schools, Tech and Virginia could be a little interested in him, but that could be fun. He looked fun on tape. He's good size, got good movement skills. I like him. And then the other one's Javonte Gibson, who is at Arkansas Pine Bluff. I want to say he had like 75 catches, 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns-ish there at Arkansas Pine Bluff. I know he's visiting Norman this week with John Mateer at the same time as him. So I know, or I'm sorry, maybe he just visited and he's shut down his rest of his visits that he's got planned. So maybe by the time this release, I don't know, he may be a Sooner. So
I would say that's a pretty good sign. Usually after your visit, he shuts down all the rest of his.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, he's a big body guy. Like he's like 6'3", 6'4", right around 200 pounds, kind of that similar size we talked about with Chase Sewell. So, yeah, I mean, something like that with all these guys, it's tough, man. It's a crapshoot because, you know, the competition is just so different from what they're playing. So the guys like him and Hosley that already are like developed, like you can see similar with Mario Anderson when he went to South Carolina from his FCS program. You're like, whoa, like he looks SEC ready, just, you know, body wise. So that's gotta play a role there. I don't know the rest of these guys other than Maverick McIver. I remember him when he was at Texas Tech.
Yeah,
and I thought it was hilarious when he went off on Texas Tech this year and almost beat them when he was at Abilene Christian.
Yeah, I'm very happy for him on that. But yeah, I like you, I'll be real. I was gonna lean on you for some of the information here on these guys. But one name I do want to throw out here is a name I actually don't have on the sheet here, but Jordan Dwyer. He's the Idaho wide receiver. He is starting to get some pretty serious buzz in the portal. And by serious buzz, I do mean that Georgia has reached out to him. And I know, again, Georgia's, you know, not the best landing spot for wide receivers or anything like that. I'm not saying that if he lands at Georgia, he's going to be a CFF wide receiver. I'm just telling you the caliber of teams that are reaching out to this guy, right? I mentioned before that Georgia really likes to really only go after guys that have, like, you know, played in the SEC, played that high level of football. And when they do reach out to a guy like this, they see a high level of talent. So the fact that Georgia's reaching out to this, you know, Idaho wide receiver here tells me a lot about what kind of caliber they think he'll be. And if he finds a spot that, you know, is like lower P4, I say watch out for him.
I think that's a great point that you bring up. I mean, if one of the best things to look at with these FCS guys that we know nothing about, you know, at least the majority of us, like, what's their offer sheet, right?
Oh, yeah.
And same thing, like, with Bauer Sharp last year. I'll use Oklahoma as an example because that's what I know. As far as, like, FCS, Bauer Sharp came up from some small FCS school in Louisiana, I want to say, like, Southeast Louisiana or whatever. But he had offers from Alabama, Oklahoma, LSU, like you could tell, and there was something there. And despite how poorly he was utilized this year, you could, like, he still was a competent tight end. And now, even after transferring, he's still at LSU, which is a nice landing spot for a tight end. So, yeah, I mean, I think more than anything, if you look at the offer list and there's some legit programs offering, it's not just like, you know, Eastern Michigan and Arkansas State that are like the other three offers, then that would be a little bit of a red flag. But yeah, when you got some big boys offering, I think that says a lot of the evaluation process with those staffs.
All righty. Well, Nate, we're bumping up right about an hour and a half here. Again, we're pretty much in the off season. Again, this is more of us just getting together. I think it's the only show that both you and I are doing this month. We're otherwise just off enjoying the holidays and everything. I don't think either one of us really have content really coming out besides this month. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. But next month, I think with the portal kind of calming down and that window kind of closing there, I think we can possibly have our first initial rankings for 2025. What do you say, Nate?
I'm in. Let's do it.
Alrighty, with that being said, again, Nate, hope you enjoy your holiday season. Everybody listening out there, appreciate you guys joining in. Nate, you got any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I will have, you know, it's not during the season, but I will have a Pulse of the CFF Nation Christmas edition coming out here within the next week or so. So
music to my ears.
Be on the lookout. Yeah, be on the lookout for that. And then because this will probably happen before we record again, but once the portal closes and we see some of these landing spots finish up and guys, you know, get to wherever they're going to be transferring to, I will do some stock up, stock down, pre-spring version articles. So be on the lookout for that as well. I do that every year. This is third or fourth year I've done that.
One of my favorite articles. And then I have done in the past a transfer portal report article. So I will probably do something similar.
Good luck with that, man.
I know. There's a lot of names here. It might be just listing name, two sentence blurb after every single one, because boy, oh boy, it's a lot to keep up with. Because I used to basically do a paragraph per player, and now I'm sitting there looking at the total list of guys, and I'm like, there's no way. There's no way.
All right, before we get out, because again, we're not going to talk till like the playoffs are either over or pretty much over. Who you got winning? Who you got in the championship? Who you got winning the whole thing?
In the championship, I got Georgia, Oregon, and as much as I want to root for my dogs, I think Oregon takes it. I think it's a bad matchup for the dogs.
Okay, I have Oregon, Penn State.
I can see it.
I think Franklin gets it done. I think he gets lucky that he's not facing Carson Beck. And I do have Oregon. I have Oregon pulling it out just like you.
Yeah, I think, again, Oregon has just been the most complete team all year. Again, obviously they had some kind of bumps in the road early on, but like they've really been the only team down the stretch that I think has really looked like, you know, what a quintessential playoff team has looked like in the past like 5 to 10 years. Versus everybody else is kind of limp into the finish line a bit. So I think they keep that momentum up. Alrighty, Nate. Well, it was a blast talking to you. Can't wait to see you next month, man.
Let's do it.